Friday afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Later on, of course, the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News. But now it's time for the showbiz segment of the show, in which Max and I tell you about movies that are opening today and our thoughts on them. There are three big movies, one of which we are not going to be reviewing today because we don't care about My Little Pony.
That's true.
When that comes up on the schedule, I look at Max, he looks at me, and we both go, eh, nah, we're not going to that one.
I gave that show a chance because when My Little Pony Friendship is Magic is what the show is called. By the way, I'm turning on Tim Weiland's mic because he might be a brony. I don't know if you're a brony or not. But I had heard all of these adults who love that show, and I thought, you know what? I like cartoons. I mean, as an adult, I'll watch Scooby-Doo. I'll watch some of that stuff. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give it a chance. And I watched about 35 to 45 seconds of one episode.
So you really gave it a chance.
Before I realized, wait a minute, this is for little girls. And that's fine.
Uh-huh.
But how are there grown men who watch the show? So when we got that screener for the email saying, hey, this Saturday, My Little Pony is going to be, I thought, nope. Not going.
No. Even if I had a 5-year-old daughter, 8-year-old daughter, 9-year-old daughter, is that the demo? I'm still not taking her. I'm just, you know.
That's a job for mom.
Yeah.
No, she ain't going either.
Yeah. Plus, I kinda didn't
not that I would stop her. If she wanted to, she could, but I'm telling you, she ain't going.
I didn't want to walk in and see all the grown men there alone.
The
too.
Bronies.
Like, yes, it's a thing. It's an actual thing.
And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I live and let live. You can do whatever you want with your life. I don't care if you want to dress up as a piece of felt fabric and walk around the world. Fine. Go ahead. Enjoy yourself. I choose not to. That's all. That's all it comes down to, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's get to the movie
I think we've offended Robert.
No, not even a little
okay.
bit.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Live and let live. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about the movie that is likely to be the winner of the new movies this weekend at the box office, and that is Blade Runner 2049. This is a sequel to a movie that originally came out in, 1982, Max?
82, that's, yeah, exactly right.
Which I could not stand. Mm-hmm. So when, again, the email came in inviting us to the press screening of this, I said to Max, you're going to this one. You're Mr. Sci-Fi. You're Mr. Fantasy. You're Mr. Comic Book. You're Mr. Sequels.
Wow. Kind of sounds horrible when you put it like that.
Well, so this is Ryan Gosling taking over in the lead, and the guy who was the lead in 1982, Harrison Ford, is in it again because, as you know, you can't remake any movie Harrison Ford was ever in without inviting him to be part of the process.
Yeah, he's sort of doing the old man returns tour right now. I mean, with Indiana Jones and Han Solo and now Rick Deckard in Blade Runner.
Are they going to do another Indiana Jones movie?
They are.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I wonder if he'll come back for Regarding Henry Part 2.
You know, Scott Turow, who wrote the book Presumed Innocent,
yes.
which was turned into a terrific movie.
Terrific
with movie. Him and Bonnie Bedelia and Raul Julia.
Just the worst haircut of all time that Harrison Ford had in that.
Yes,
he
did.
Like a Caesar cut.
Yes.
Just, yeah.
Kind of a Caesar / bowl cut, a combination of those two.
Great movie.
And Paul Winfield is in that movie as the judge and is also excellent. Scott Turow wrote a sequel to that. And I haven't heard word one about it becoming a movie. I even interviewed him when the book came out, and I said, have you sold the rights to this? And he said, no, not yet. And I was surprised, because the first one was so good.
Yeah.
So if they
maybe
do...
Maybe Harrison will come back.
If they do, he'll come back as Sandy Stern. That was his character in
well,
that movie.
You made the right decision to not go see this, Paul, if you were basing it on your lack of love for the first film, because this is very, very similar.
Okay.
And so it's going to be easy to review in the way that if you liked the first one... I think you'll enjoy this one if you didn't. And there are plenty of people who did not like that first movie. It was not a box office success. E.T. crushed it that year. And even at the time, critics really were divided on it. And it was somewhat famously has about 7 different versions, different studio edits. And it was really only about 10 years ago in 2007 that Ridley Scott got the control that he wanted over his own film and released something called The Final Cut with like jazzed up special effects and stuff. That one screened here in St. Louis.
That always comes off to me as the pouting director who didn't get what he wanted the first time around.
But it would be like somebody doing or getting a recording of your show, but then editing out your comments and putting in different comments. And that's kind of what they did to his film. They had this narration that Harrison Ford did not want to read, and he tried to read it in the most monotone, horrible voice ever, so they wouldn't use it, but they did. Mm. They took out important sequences in the middle, and they also had a quote-unquote happy ending tacked on that film. So it wasn't until about 10 years ago that we got the actual film as he wanted to make it, and I think it's spectacular. I love Blade Runner, and I was firmly against this idea of a sequel 35 years later. I don't mind if it's a fun movie like Tron that, you know, some people kind of dig Tron and, oh, look, Jeff Bridges is coming back. Let's have a fun sci-fi romp. But Blade Runner, how dare you, sir?
Okay, so the fact that it's Blade Runner 2049 and not just Blade Runner tells me it's not a sequel. I mean, it's not a remake. It's a sequel.
It is. It takes place 35 years later. So, okay. Yeah, sort of like Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Is it still
Awakens.
A dystopian future?
It is. It is bleak.
I'm
it
out.
Is, it is bleak.
I'm and, out like Mark Cuban is out.
It's bleak and it's depressing and it's sad and nobody's having a good time. And it's sort of the cinematic equivalent of a rainy day. You know, I mean, you're just going to put it on and go, wow, I thought my life was bad.
The first one looked like a bad rainy day with neon signs and flying cars.
And this one has more neon and more flying cars.
Okay. I'm down for the flying cars, but not
the
dystopia.
Are pretty cool. Now, if you've
by the way, let me just point this out again. I've said this before when I've talked about flying cars, and I'll make this point again. I do not want everybody to have flying cars. Because people said, you're going to take regular drivers and put them up there? You know what havoc that will be? No, I want me to have a flying car. Not you, me. That's utopia. Everyone having flying cars? Dystopia. You see the difference?
If you've seen the press releases for this, if you've seen the movie posters or even the trailers, Harrison Ford is all over the place. He's front and center. He's the star of the film, except he's not. So it's important knowing going in, you're only going to get about 20 minutes of Harrison Ford towards the end. He's in the last act.
Okay.
And so because of that, you know that he's going to show up. So you spend the whole movie on pins and needles. When is Harrison going to show up? If you remember that first movie, there were all kinds of questions on whether or not Harrison Ford's character was a replicant, which is basically an android, or if he was human. You had Edward James Olmos and Sean Young in that movie. In this one, it really is Ryan Gosling's movie. He plays a detective, a.k.a. a Blade Runner for the LAPD, named K, the letter K.
Not from Men in Black, though.
No. He's a different futuristic sci-fi guy named okay. K.
Because that was utopia. This is dystopia.
He's trying to find, and this is sort of a hard-boiled noir kind of movie where he is trying to find the missing pieces to this puzzle. And, of course, the conspiracy is way bigger than him. And so it's a similar. I can't really say anything about the plot, though. And I also, Paul, I can't tell you.
Wait. You can't say anything because you'll spoil it, or you can't say it because you don't understand it?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Okay.
This was the first movie in a long time to make me feel downright stupid. But I mean that in a good way. It was like when I was watching Inception, going, I'm not really sure I'm following what Christopher Nolan's doing here. Same thing with Blade Runner 2049. I really thought, what was the connection with that character, and who is this person again? But I really want to see it again because I enjoy peeling back those layers. This movie is, against all odds, very, very good. I am shocked that there is a Blade Runner sequel after all this time, and I'm also shocked that I enjoyed it so much.
Okay, now, here's a question I have because I didn't like it, but I didn't. I didn't like it, but I completely didn't understand it. Completely didn't understand
it.
No one has a blade, and no one runs. So why would you call your movie Blade Runner?
For the same reason that Quentin Tarantino called his first movie Reservoir Dogs. They never go to a reservoir. There's no dogs.
That's true.
So here's the sequel question that everyone will ask. Do you have to have seen the first one to fully understand the second one? Even though maybe you still haven't fully understood it, should you go back, watch the first one, then come and see this one? Or can you just cold turkey it straight into this
one? You know, cold turkey, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense because they're constantly referring to the events of that first one. So you could cold turkey it, but it would be like only reading the second part of a book.
Oh, then that's going to hurt the box office for this, because I think a lot of people, you know, you said it wasn't a hit in 82.
Yeah.
So an enormous amount of people, a whole new generation of people who never saw the movie. What if they go see it this weekend? Are they going to be able to follow it?
I was surprised at how dense and dark and depressing this movie was, that I don't think it's going to have a very big box office, because I think people were getting uncomfortable. There's long scenes with no dialogue and just Hans Zimmer's music really trying to do a throwback kind of score. It's a very strange film that I don't think is going to do very well. It'll probably be on my top 10 best list.
Really?
I really enjoyed this movie, but I don't think it's going to find a really big audience. People who see Ryan Gosling in La La Land, you know, this is much more Drive era Ryan Gosling. You know, he's not being chipper.
Okay. But he plays effectively a cop whose yes. job is to hunt down
replicants.
These replicants, which yeah. are androids who act and look like human beings.
Yeah, the plot of the first film was AI, computer intelligence, had gotten so good that that you could make these robots, these androids, these replicants, look and feel like humans. And so they manufacture them for lots of different purposes, mostly slave labor. So we were going out to colonize a moon, so you send a bunch of replicants and let them do all that. But you also had in the private market, you know, pleasure bots, you know, things like that, things that probably will exist here in our time. And they gave them all four-year lifespans. Well, there were some experimental ones that had a higher, learning rate who said, you know, 4 years is not a long time. I want some more time. And they started to rebel. And that was the plot of the first one. So Rick Deckard, Harrison Ford, being a cop, had to make sure that he was killing androids and not real people because they look just like us.
Yeah.
And they would try to infiltrate and get jobs. And so that was his job. And
sounds like it's Logan's Run for androids.
And
you can only live a certain amount of time and then you're
gone. Yeah. So in this one, it's 35 years later and the technology has increased in that time where now it's even more difficult to figure out who's human, who isn't. And there's a whole underground resistance of replicants who have been trying to live peacefully. And
sounds
so,
like you're telling me that Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk are right, that artificial intelligence will be the death of us.
And perhaps it'll create something better than us. More human than human.
Nothing better than humans. Not possible.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed this
movie. I know I'm a human. I'm saying that.
It's a great, great movie.
Yeah.
Robin
Wright.
Any
androids you want to call in,
feel free.
Yeah.
I could be an android. You don't know.
I'm sure.
For plotline perspective, can you say who the good and bad guys are?
No.
Okay.
Ryan Gosling's the good guy. Harrison Ford, also good guy, if he plays the same character.
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess so.
Is his character 35 years older? Is he the same guy?
Yes. I can't say too much about the plot.
Well, now we know he can't be a replicant because he got 35 years older.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know.
What do you give this thing on a scale of 10?
I give this thing a 9.
Wow.
Yeah, I really, really loved it. I would like to see it again.
But you don't think it's going to own the box office this weekend?
This weekend it will, because you've had a bunch of film nerds who have waited 35 years for this, and it looks spectacular. I would recommend seeing it on the biggest screen possible. It'll have a good first weekend, but I think the word of mouth is going to be that's not a fun time at the movies. And if you're Robert's age and you've never seen that first one, you're not going to know who any of these people are,
mm-hmm.
or any of the big reveals that happen aren't going to mean anything to you. I think it might be like the first one where it has a bad box office, and in years later we say it was a masterpiece.
All right. Coming up next, I have a review of a new movie that is not dystopian, although being stuck on a snowy mountain after a plane crash, probably not utopia either. It's called The Mountain Between Us. I'll tell you about it right after this.
Meet me.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Max is here with me. We're doing the showbiz stuff. I asked him to play Mountain because I'm about to review a movie called The Mountain Between Us, and I will, but we just have this breaking news that just came in from TMZ. The comedian Ralphie May has died at the age of 45. You would know Ralphie May if I told you the largest comedian on the planet. And I say that because my wife and I are big fans of the Penn & Teller show Fool Us on the CW, which I believe has just completed its season. And 2 or 3 weeks ago, Ralphie May was a guest on the show, not doing a magic act, but one of the magicians had him come out. Every once in a while, they would put celebrities on there to be an assistant for the magician or to have them up there on stage as the stooge. And Ralphie May came out, and he was wearing a relatively tight shirt. And I'm telling you, this guy weighs 400 pounds, you think?
Weighed
400 pounds. And I had met Ralphie several years ago when he came in here, and he was on with John Carney. And he was a funny guy. I believe he won Last Comic Standing at some point. That probably is where he shot to national fame. But when I met him years ago, he was a large guy who on this TV show a couple of weeks ago had evolved into an extra large guy. And it kind of reminded me of another comedian I knew 20 years ago by the name of John Panette, who was also, let's say it, a fat guy. He would have told you he was a fat guy. He made jokes about being fat in the same way that Louis Anderson had the generation before him. And in all three of those instances, these guys never were able to kick the overeating habit. And it's a shame. Louis Anderson is still around. He's been on that Zach Galifianakis show on FX called Baskets. Mm-hmm. But John Panette died a few years ago from diseases related to his being so huge. And now the word that Ralphie May, dead at the age of 45. Do you have a cause of death?
I do. Cardiac arrest.
Well, right there. You weigh that much and you carry that much weight around every day. It's going to catch up with you eventually. So sorry to break that sad news to you. Now let's go on to the movie The Mountain Between Us. This is a movie that's getting an enormous amount of promotion. It stars very good actors named Idris Elba and Kate Winslet. In this movie, they just want to get home. Kate's character has to get to her wedding the next day in New York. Idris's character has to operate on a patient in Baltimore. He's a surgeon. However, they're stuck in an airport in Idaho where a snowstorm has grounded all commercial flights. They've been told at the desk, no, sorry, no flights getting out of here tonight. You're not going to get there. But it's an emergency. Well, it doesn't matter if it's an emergency. No flights are leaving. And so they're desperate to get out of there. And she suggests to him that they go and try to find a charter pilot who will get them out of there. And they do. They get a guy who is willing to fly them to Denver, which means going over the Rockies from Idaho, and they're hoping that from there the weather will be good enough that they can then catch their flights east. The pilot of this private plane is played by Bo Bridges. Unfortunately, his character suffers a stroke, and the plane crashes in the snow-covered Rockies. Up until this point, I have not given away anything that the movie itself doesn't already want you to know through its commercials and its trailer. That's the story. Bo Bridges' character, the pilot, dies, and now you've got only Kate and Idris and Bo's dog. Right there is where I knew we were in trouble, when the dog is along for the flight, and the dog survives the flight. Because what kind of movie maker in 2017 is ever going to let that dog die? Every moment that dog is on screen, somebody in the theater is going, oh. And you're not going to reverse that by letting the dog die. Now, the good news for the dog and for Kate, who ends up with a broken leg in the plane crash, is that Idris is not just a doctor. He's a surgeon, and so he can care for them as the wounded. She, on the other hand, is a photojournalist, so she can take pictures. Well, let's just say she's up for an adventure. And the adventure is you've crashed in the Rockies with nothing around you. And I will tell you that the scenery in this movie is absolutely beautiful. I give major kudos to the location scouts for this movie who found this untouched wilderness. I'm guessing it was shot in Canada. They found this untouched wilderness where they made this movie, and in every shot, you can't see that there are tracks from equipment. And, you know, they had to bring in equipment and people to make a movie. It's not like somebody went up there and shot the whole thing from a helicopter or one person standing in the snow. No, a lot of people had to be there, but you can't tell that. It's very, very well done from the cinematography standpoint. Unfortunately, Idris and Kate don't have much chemistry on screen. They're both good actors, but this is not the right movie for them. That chemistry is an essential element in what is basically, from that point on, a two-hander, a two-person story of survival and maybe love. Here's the worst thing about this movie, among many bad things. The worst thing about it is nothing happens that you will not see coming over the next mountain.
So they don't kill and eat the dog?
I didn't say that.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't kill and eat the dog. What, are you crazy?
My first thought, if you're stranded on a mountain and you have this perfectly
well,
good
maybe,
dog
maybe
there.
If we were up there for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. Oh, wait, they are. You will see this thing coming a mile away even without one of Kate's telephoto lenses. Now, I will tell you that I've talked to three women who saw the screening of this movie, and at the end, they were all, oh, I loved it.
Oh.
I loved this movie.
Really?
I'm guessing that's partly because of the dog and partly because they saw something in the relationship that I did not see. I asked each of them, what about the ending, which I'm not going to give away.
Ooh,
and they
off
all,
the air, you have to.
And they all said, oh, that was great. I love the way this movie ended. That's what they said.
Mm.
I've talked to one other male movie reviewer who is with me on Ugh, as a review for this.
Do they get married?
I am not going to give away the ending, Max.
Is the dog the ring bearer?
I am not going to give away the ending. I've already told you enough about the dog. I didn't even tell you if Idris and Kate survived this thing. But if you've ever seen a movie before.
Maybe Kate is on this floating door in the middle of the, like a snowbank.
Well, in that case, Idris would die.
Right.
I'm not giving anything else about this movie away because some people will want to go see it. And guys, I'm just telling you right now, be prepared to be dragged to this movie by the woman in your life. And if you're smart, you will say, go with your girlfriends. Because it's a definite male-female schism on the opinions on this movie. My opinion is, and this is purely because of the people in it being good and the scenery being good, I'm giving it an extremely generous 4 out of 10.
Ooh, a 4.
Extremely generous. That's because I started thinking about some of the worst movies I've seen this year, and this isn't one of the worst movies of the year, but it's certainly not one of the good movies of the year. It's called The Mountain Between Us. It will do some box office this weekend from people who don't want to go off and see a sci-fi movie
sure.
or a little pony.
Yep, true.
All right. More showbiz stuff coming up after this on the Big 550 KTRS. All right, Friday afternoon. I am Paul Harris. Thank you very much for listening. Following me on Twitter at Paul Harris Show. You can also follow Max on Twitter at Max on Movies. And we've just reviewed the two of the three big movies that are opening this weekend. Max gave Blade Runner 2049 a 9 out of 10. If you like dystopian futures in the sci-fi realm and remakes of Harrison Ford movies that star Harrison Ford, and is there any other?
It's not a remake. It's a sequel.
It's a sequel. Excuse
and
me.
I agree with you that I'm also burnt out on dystopian futures, but Blade Runner was one of the films in my estimation that handled that the best. And
okay.
So that's why I really did enjoy the follow-up.
All right, fine. The movie I reviewed was The Mountain Between Us with Kate Winslet and Idris Elba, two good actors stuck in a bad movie, which I gave a 4 out of 10. If you are a Netflix subscriber, in a couple of weeks, you're going to be getting a notice from Netflix saying that your price is going up. They are jacking it up from $9.99 to $10.99 for the standard service, from $11.99 to $13.99 for the premium tier. If you have the basic $7.99 plan, which I think is you can watch a movie, you just can't enjoy it. I think that's what that means for $8 a month. That's going to stay where it is, at least for now.
Well, that's kind of nice.
Netflix says, hey, we haven't raised prices in 3 years, which is okay. You can make that argument.
Worth every penny.
Wait a second. Here's the other part of this. This week, Ted Sarandos, who's the chief content officer at Netflix, came out and said that their budget for new content was $6 billion. But the company's decided that's not enough. They're going to spend $7 billion. How do you get that? Well, you have 100 million users, and you charge them each $1 more per month.
Mm-hmm.
That's $12 more per year. 12 times 100 million is $1.2 billion. That's how you get your extra $1 billion to make all your extra content. Now, is all the extra content worth it? I will tell you that Netflix does have some quality stuff. The most recent series I liked on there a lot was Ozark, which we talked about earlier in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I like some of the stand-up stuff. I watched Jerry Seinfeld's new stand-up special, which is really old stuff. It's called Jerry Before Seinfeld, and it goes back to all the material he was doing at the comic strip in New York as he was coming up in the 70s and 80s. But a lot of the stuff that's on there, you go, recommended for you on your Netflix app, and you go through and go, nope, 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 nope. Speaking of stand-ups, is there a stand-up in the world who has not been signed by Netflix at this point? They have about 100 stand-up specials.
Yeah.
not only just everybody, including all the everybodies you never heard of.
And some of them are really short. I mean, some of those specials are half an hour.
Yeah.
Very strange.
They remind me of the half hour comedy hour.
Right. Yeah. With Carol Eifer.
So, yeah, they're spending all that money on it, but you're the one who ends up paying for it if you're a Netflix subscriber. Again, this is going to go into effect in November. They're probably going to be sending out notices in the next week or so. If you haven't gotten one yet, you're paying for all that stuff that Ted Sarandos wants to do. He also pointed out, however, even if you have our top-tier plan, the premium tier, mm-hmm. where four different people can watch Netflix all at the same time on all sorts of different devices, that's going up to $13.99. HBO charges $15 a month. And Hulu, with their commercial-free plan, is right in the same range.
Yeah, true.
So all
Netflix
those,
has always been cheaper.
All those people who are saying, let's cut the cord, let's go over the top with all those other things, how many of those different plans can you possibly have before at a certain point it's as expensive as cable TV?
I would pay, don't tell Ted I said this, I would pay double what I pay right now for Netflix.
Really?
I love Netflix. I always find something to watch. I'm perplexed by the people who say, there's nothing on Netflix. Are you kidding me? There's a ton of movies that you've never seen. There's a ton of great shows that you've never watched.
There's a lot of great imported shows that are on there. My wife and I like a lot of these British detective shows that they have on there. And by the way, Amazon Prime also has terrific stuff. And it's kind of a parallel thing. Like HBO and Showtime used to battle for the rights to movies. Mm-hmm. Now Amazon Prime and Netflix battle for the rights. And if it gets on one streaming service, it'll never get on the other streaming service as long as that deal is going, right?
Well, and we have Disney now who is taking all of their stuff off of Netflix.
Not till next year.
And oh, really? Next year? Okay. Yeah. And they're starting their own streaming service.
Yes.
I think you would have to subscribe to a lot of streaming services, though, to get it close to cable TV. Some of the people I know who are paying $200, $210 a month, even the streaming services are $10 here, $10 there. So you'd have to have a lot of different packages.
Yeah, you're probably right. One other Netflix note, and because you're a comic book guy, you probably know about a character named The Punisher.
Yeah, absolutely. Frank Castle.
It's a Marvel
comic book character named Frank Castle who had his family killed in front of him by the mob. So he goes a little crazy and decides to flat out murder everybody. He is a vigilante.
They were going to have the premiere of that at the New York Comic Con this week. But after what happened in Las Vegas on Sunday, maybe a movie about a guy who kills a lot of people. Not such a good idea. They haven't canceled the series. They just canceled the premiere.
The series looks like it's going to be fantastic. John Bernthal from The Walking Dead is playing Frank Castle, and he had a cameo in a show called Daredevil last year, and he was really great. But, yes, it's a very violent character. He's always been a controversial character. He was introduced in the pages of Spider-Man back in the 70s, and he's always been a really controversial character because he's not like Batman or Superman. I mean, he will flat out kill you. And so there's a lot of parents who haven't liked the character. There's a lot of
he'll kill you with
readers.
A gun.
Absolutely, he's a very
that's
violent.
That's so unsuperhero like.
Well, he's not a superhero.
Obviously,
I don't even know if he's a good guy.
His special powers are he'll kill you with a gun.
Pretty much, yeah.
He'll shoot you dead.
He wears a giant skull on his shirt just in case you don't really know where he's coming from.
He's a Grateful Dead fan.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I saw you tweet this week that you had finally gotten around to a Bill Murray movie that came out a couple of years ago called St. Vincent.
That's right.
But you didn't say online whether you liked it or not, so say it now.
Yeah, I did if you click through and read the review, but I didn't want to spoil that in the headline because we're trying to get clicks. There's a film site that I write for called Zeke Film, Z-E-K-E Film, and every month they do something called Film Admissions where you admit that there's this big movie you haven't seen. And we've done different genres, superhero films, animated classics. And so this month it was Bill Murray. And so the writers took on a whole bunch of different movies like Lost in Translation, Mad Dog, and Glory. And I had never seen St. Vincent, which came out in 2014. I don't know how I missed it. And I did not realize until I was watching the film, it was written, produced, and directed by the guy that wrote, directed, and produced Hidden Figures.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was before Hidden Figures.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I felt the exact same way about St. Vincent that I did about Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures is a great, great, great movie that should be required viewing by just about everybody. I got very angry watching that film that I hadn't learned about these women
Me too.
In school. But I did think there were scenes that sort of went off the rails into more of a saccharine movie of the week type of
the relationship stuff outside of NASA.
Yes, exactly. And like the car breaking down and all of that. I just thought, oh, some of this is kind of movie.
Oh, I like that car breakdown of the movie at the beginning.
I thought it was
that was a good way to set the characters.
I thought it was on the nose. But St. Vincent, I felt the exact same way. It's got a really great performance by Bill Murray, who's actually trying to do a character. But I did think that there were some scenes that got a little too saccharine, a little too sweet towards the end, especially. But all in all, I liked it. I like seeing Melissa McCarthy play serious. I don't think she does that enough. And the little boy in the movie that Murray, who is a drunken Vietnam vet who has just a horrible life, he ends up babysitting this kid while his mom, Melissa McCarthy, works long hours. And the kid is the kid from It. He's like the main guy, Bill, in the new It movie, which I thought was pretty cool.
Which has now made $800 million or something like that.
It is the highest grossing R-rated horror film of all time.
Wow.
Yeah. But I did enjoy it. So if you want to watch St. Vincent, and it's out on, I watched it on Netflix. It was streaming right there. So I hit play and was able to check it out.
I liked it, not quite as much as you did, because after a while I just felt like I knew this character from about 15 other movies. And it was that same old cranky neighbor who takes care of the kid kind of thing. But I agree with you. I like the fact that Melissa McCarthy was playing a non-goofy character. She doesn't bounce off any walls.
Right.
She doesn't do anything stupid. She's not making funny faces. She's playing a real human being and imbuing her with real character. So that's the thing I admired most about that movie.
I have a bit of a problem when you have that archetype that you're talking about where, you know, the cranky old man, he takes the kid gambling on horses.
Yeah.
He drinks so much he passes out in front of the kid. He takes him to bars.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
A real role model.
Well, in the movie makes it like, isn't this funny? He's so crazy. It's like, no, that's actually horrific.
Yes.
And so that's why the movie wasn't really, it didn't have enough bite for me. But all in all, I did like it.
Yeah. I liked it. I didn't love it. Mm. There was a movie that came out earlier this year that 99% of you will have missed because I don't recall being invited to a press screening of it, and I don't recall it getting into a movie theater for more than a week, if that, in St. Louis, which is surprising because it stars Bryan Cranston, who is having one heck of a career in the post-Breaking Bad era. The movie was called Wakefield. Did you see this movie?
I don't think I've even heard of it.
Okay. This is a movie in which Bryan Cranston plays a guy who you just know he's got one of those busy kind of briefcase kind of jobs. He commutes to work on the train. He works in a big city. He's got a big office. He's got an important job. But one day when he's coming home, the train can't get him all the way there because there's a power outage and everybody on the train has to get out and they have to walk on the tracks and take a bus. And eventually he ends up taking a cab back to his house and he's outside and he looks in and there he sees his beautiful wife, Jennifer Garner, and their two lovely tweener daughters. And he stops and he looks around a little bit and he looks at the room over the garage. And instead of going into the house to be with his wife and daughters, he goes in and climbs up to that attic above the garage where he has a window view of their kitchen and that part of the house from one side of that attic and from another window on the other side. He can see upstairs to where his bedroom is, where Jennifer Garner apparently doesn't feel it's important to close the curtains when she's dressing and undressing. So you get to see a little bit of, well, all you get to see really is side boob. But still, Jennifer Garner, very attractive woman. Okay, fine. Here's the thing. He goes up there and he stays up there. And he essentially is spying on his wife and family.
Huh.
As he starts going a little bit crazy. Because he can't keep going into the house at night after they're asleep and getting food. Eventually, they're going to get suspicious. Somebody's going to hear or see something or notice that there's food missing.
Do they think he's on a business trip?
They don't know what happened to him. She calls the police. They have no real interest in finding him because there are no clues. And she and the girls have to kind of go on with their lives, which tells you how important he wasn't to that family.
Right, right.
And how the relationship that he had with his wife wasn't really as great as it could have been. Here's the problem. I turned this movie off 1 hour in. I watched it with my wife.
Really?
And about 1 hour in, I said to her, I'm done with this. And she said, me too. This guy's a jerk, and I don't want to know anything more about him.
Sure.
So I don't know whether they ever get back together again, so I can't spoil it for you. But I can tell you that it's one of the most unpleasant characters I've seen in a movie in quite some time.
It says this was based on a short story by E.L. Doctorow and Nathaniel Hawthorne. So adapted from, I guess, very old material.
It doesn't work as new material. It's called Wakefield, and you can avoid it. Trust me. And that's our showbiz stuff for this hour on the Big 550 KTRS. Next hour, the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the news. Meep, meep.